Inside Wirtschaft, der Podcast mit Manuel Koch.
Markets rebounded on Friday after we saw the day before the biggest sell-off on Wall Street since March. This is the IG Trading Talk. I'm Manuel Koch. And joining me now are Salah Idin Ebumidi, the head of markets of IG, and the Einstein of Wall Street, Peter Tuckman, over 35 years on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. So good to see you guys.
Good to be here. Hi, Manuel.
Peter, I think the first topic has to be the Federal Reserve. Last week, we saw Jerome Powell having some news. I mean, the interest rates are not going negative, but we heard that he has a pretty pessimistic outlook for the U.S. economy.
So, you know, it's interesting how historically, the way the markets and the investment community interpret the Federal Reserve Chairman speak, right? When it happens in real time, the markets usually go up, 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 down, 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 as different people react to it and try and understand what to make of it, right? First, there's an announcement about the interest rates staying where they are. Then there was his announcement that we're looking towards 2022 with basically zero interest rate. So do we think of it as a positive thing because, okay, we're not going negative? Or it's all perspective. Or do we think of it, which I think is one of the reasons that contributed to the sell-off that we saw midweek last week, was because the bank's trading model, we saw a lot of the sell-off come from the banking financial sector. And a lot of their trading model is based on interest rates, right? And if we are now going to not look at anything more than zero till 2022, that is going to obviously impact their profitability to a certain extent.
What, I mean, some people already expected maybe to have negative interest rates. Would this change a lot?
Well, I'm sort of happy that what we are doing as far as negative interest rates goes, to disregarding any pressure coming out of the administration, is that we've not seen that to be a successful trade. It's not been a successful protocol, wherever it's been, right? And we are also, you know, so much went into this big sell-off that we had midweek last week. If you're interested in my opinion, I think it was sort of a five-fold situation. You know, I think that this market was obviously, we've talked about it before, this unusual exuberance, irrational exuberance in the marketplace with hopes of, you know, one day it was a hope of a drug coming out. One day it was a hope of a reopening that was successful. One was a hope that there was no further spikes in the virus. One was a hope that the stimulus package would be enough and they would keep pouring money into the markets, and that we were going to have $120 billion a month being added into the balance sheet of the Fed. And I think all of this contributed to a perfect storm. We've also spoken before that individual headlines will take a market up 1,000 or down 1,000. That's the new norm. Right? Whether it's virus, whether it's treatment, whether it's the administration, whether it's China, whatever it is, those are the 1,000-point moves. But what we find is that when we have a perfect storm of multifaceted headlines that start eating away at the market, we see that fast and furious sell-off that we had mid last week.
Fed is a good topic. I mean, central banks, they're only key or their only value is communication. You need to work with communication really good. And looking back to that, how do you think is the Fed communication? Because I think it's brilliant how they work and how this communication is working. Because if we assume just like there's a fire in a wood and somebody is alarming the fire department, they send out 10 trucks. As they reach over there, they see, oh, this fire can be solved just with one truck. If they sent these trucks away, this could just affect the market. And this is what we see right now, I think. The Fed is also under pressure, Peter. And I think if everything's going really well, I think they could also change their monetary policy, not extremely, but going back to where we have been in January, before Corona.
So I agree with you. Clarity of communication from the Federal Reserve, hopefully maintaining a wall between the administration's pressure and not. Their job is to deal with markets and the economy, right? Actually, the economy, right? Is that's what their goal is. So I have found Mr. Powell, I also agree with you. I think he's been wonderful in his communication, okay? He made it very clear that we would give, see, so some people responded to the midweek last week sell-off that it was in relation to the bad outlook that the Fed said. I don't interpret it that way. Basically, if I what I heard, and then we all hear different things when it, as it fills into our model and our perception, but what I heard him say was that there may be more stimulus if we need it, that we are nimble, right? We will freestyle through it, as you described the story about the fire trucks in the woods. We will be there. We don't want to throw, although they've thrown everything at it, and they said, we will do whatever it takes to maintain markets and the economy as stable as possible, okay? And if we need less, we'll pull back. If we need more, we'll pull back. There are still unknowns in this story. The playbook is not written for what is happening in the world right now. Then there was a report that came out of Seeking Alpha, and I almost emailed it to you, about the fact that perhaps midweek sell-off last week was a much bigger story. We talked about, is the economy going to catch up with the market, or is the market going to catch up with the economy? When is the market going to realize that we are now seeing incredible breakdown in GDP in India and emerging markets all over the world? We're seeing spikes in China, South America, and places where they did not have it. We're seeing spikes in 21 states in the United States after the Memorial Day reopenings. That was one of the contributing factors to the big sell-off last week. Okay, we are seeing a confidence that puts put in question. This was a consumer based strong economy that we talked about up until February 12th, when we hit a record, right? That was where our strength came from. Well, the consumer is not in good condition. We don't know what that's going to lead to. So I love the fact that you brought up the Federal Reserve. I think they're going to do everything they can. I still think there are plenty of unknowns in how it goes forward. And as let's be clear, this administration is running on a strong market. And the pressure that they put on the Fed, which historically has never done well and should be completely bifurcated. It's a new word I learned this week. There should be a fork in the road there. It's not that way. They've crossed that wall. So I think we have more to learn on this.
From the confidence aspect, technically speaking, in the S&P 500, I don't see any confidence, to be honest. If we look on the stocks in the S&P 500, only almost 40% of the stocks are trending above the 200 moving average, even if we can see that the S&P 500 is actually trying to defend this 200 moving average. If we look on the relative strength, my border is always the 48 spot 5 level. We passed it back to the south weights, so I don't see confidence if I look on market breadth, also on advanced decline line. So, I mean, of course, Peter, technical analysis is not the only thing you should consider if you are talking about the markets. But what could you say about that?
So I read something yesterday, which I found fascinating, that they feel that, you know about Robinhood, you know about the fact that we're seeing a surge of young people, immature traders, amateur traders, right? People coming in. And I think, you know, there are people who run funds, money, more mature. They've never seen this before. But if you listen to the pundits who talk about where they're putting their money, you know, they're not trading this market the way some people are. Some people think that the big rally midweek last week and then this precipitous 1,800-point sell-off was basically amateur traders, stop orders that went off once the erosion of confidence started. So I agree with you. I don't think the market's based on fundamentals or confidence. I think it's based on cowboys and Indians. This rally has been a very cowboy and Indian rally, as seen by we should be learning on a day-to-day basis what that last week's sell-off was, right? An 1,800-point sell-off, they were calling it a bloodbath. In perspective, it's not. It brought us back to the beginning of the month in a lot of ways. I agree with you that the S&P has actually not been outperforming some of the high-flying stocks, but the way stocks are trading, there's no foundation to them. Today they love them, tomorrow they hate them. They love them at noon, they hate them at three. You know, there's this, you know, there are people who are trading the cyclicals, getting out of the outperformers, getting into the underperformers. The ones that they have a huge profit in over the last 30 days, they're selling with abandon. You know, if you've got the rally that we've seen since March 23rd, and there are people trading, and there are a lot more people trading, you know, if you've got 30, 40, 50%, as we talked about, way past Fibonacci retracement, then at that point, they want to hit a button. They see the market careening off a cliff, as they did in the sell-off last Thursday, then they just want out. You know what I'm saying? So it was almost, it's almost trading with a level of immaturity in that way, you know, my opinion.
Peter, talking about the S&P, we also have to talk about the NASDAQ. We saw a record high, over 10,000 points. Are they different worlds on the in the tech sector?
Well, we saw that, and they have been the main leaders of it. And I think a lot of them are prominent in their profitability in within the pandemic model, right? So many of them are online conferencing, are online e-commerce, and online social media, right? What makes them up, right? The Facebooks, the Googles, the Zoom, the Amazons, right? So they've benefited from whatever we're going through. It's very hard to break down in a fundamental way what other companies benefited from this. Benefited from this pandemic, if you really want to use sort of a tainted, strange interpretation. You know, we've got biotechs that are up like crazy, and they are very fragile. They can be up to 70, 90 one day, and down to 30, 40 the next day. So we did see, though, how fragile NASDAQ is. After it got to 10,000, if the relative strength index had gone a spread beyond up into 70%, RLI went up to the 70 level, which was a definite within a bull market. That was a sell trigger, right? And we saw it sell off 5% the next day, didn't we?
Yeah.
So I think all these markets are fragile. And I think one of the contributing factors beyond the stimulus and the fear of missing out and all of these amateur traders is the fact that there's liquidity in the marketplace is thin. I think some of the mature investors, not traders, have stepped aside in a market that can go up, you know, in the eyes of a complete economic slowdown, up 40, 50%, and then come in 5.5% in one day. Those are mature investment community members who are not really participating. Let's go back to Warren Buffett. He did not participate in the sell-off from February 12th to March 23rd at all. He's a mature investor. We know his reasoning behind it. So this market has really been, the format has been amateur traders, fear of missing out, some stimulus, but traders and not investors. And I think that's nothing wrong with traders. We need them in the marketplace. But the moves that we've seen in the market in NASDAQ and who's benefited more from our situation globally than the other stocks. I think that's one of the big factors.
So, Peter, what do we make out of this? On the one hand, we have the fears about the economic situation. A lot of people are jobless. Companies are going to be bankrupt after the crisis. On the other hand, we have billions and trillions of the Federal Reserve. In which direction are the markets going?
Okay, so let's be clear, bifurcating. We can all look it up. It's a great word. The markets and the economy are trading in a bifurcation, in opposite bizarre worlds, right? So this different scenarios are these. It's up on that stimulus package. I don't know if we didn't speak last week, but the week before, where we saw that if we analyze the 2007 stimulus, it was $1.8 trillion over 18 months. We've seen $3 trillion over 8 weeks. That has contributed to this incredible rebound in the marketplace. What I think that maybe yesterday, last week's sell-off gave me a little bit of an inkling was, because it's funny how the press can be very shoulda, woulda, coulda. When the market is up, everyone said, oh, I called it. I told you it was going to happen. And then when the market sells off 1,800 points, they go, you see, you should have known. We talked about it, right? So I don't like to be the shoulda, woulda, coulda guy. I will present two scenarios to you. Is if they're going, this administration is running on a strong market. So this stimulus has been $3 trillion into the marketplace. The Federal Reserve is buying back $120 billion a month in building their balance sheet. That money is getting into the marketplace. We are probably going to see a further stimulus package. So, you know, I would think, so that's one scenario. That will be the contributing factor to the market staying up. However, what we saw happen in midweek sell-off last week was a bit concerning, because there is a narrative that is so negative out there economically, right? So the market could be pricing in a perfect case scenario. The reopening will go smooth. People will start getting on cruise ships. The airlines will be fine. You know, restaurants will reopen. There won't be a spike in the virus. And it's all fine and good in September. You know, it, like the president said, in April, the sun will come out and the virus will disappear. In September, we'll have a treatment and things will go forward. Yesterday, and it wasn't just last week, but it's important to note that the real economic numbers are devastating. What we're seeing is of GDP throughout Europe, okay, in South America and in the United States, those numbers are devastating. The unemployment numbers are devastating. The fact that the president had the gall to jump on board the number that we saw the week before of additional employment of 2.5 million as a triumph, when there are 38 million people unemployed who are soon to going to run out of their money. And the fact is that we are seeing this incredible spike in the United States of 21 states that were irresponsible about reopening too early in May 31st. Arizona, North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida are seeing their ICU units at capacity already. So we are having a bit of a flashback to March very quickly, right? So that's the other case scenario. So a lot of last week's midweek sell-off was all the negative narrative. Their positive narrative is very Fed and stimulus based, nothing economic. The negative narrative is real hardcore numbers, economic stuff, that once the market starts to focus on it, we could see a fragile market going forward.
Question to FOMO, fear of missing out. You are an experienced trader on the stock exchange, and you are an expert. What could you give to our listeners in terms of fear of missing out? Nowadays, or in this corona time, we see a huge good rally, but it's not healthy, of course. But people could say, this is a kind of fear of missing out. If I would have the fear, I would really miss this new rally.
Okay, so if you look at it historically, the crash of 1987, the financial crisis of 2007, the Brexit sell-off, the President Trump election sell-off, any of these fast and furious oversold conditions due to crisis or headlines have historically been buying opportunities. Okay, let us separate the investment community and the trading community. Our market needs traders. I love that young people, new people are coming into the marketplace. That's why we started to talk about this is an amazing opportunity to learn the discipline of trading. Okay, I'll tell you just a quick little scenario. Back in the 80s, I met a gentleman. It was around the time that Yahoo became public. And and it opened at $3 or $12, and it ran up to $450. And then within a period of a few, and everyone was, you know, going out to dinner and buying champagne and making money. And then within a few days, we turned out to be a bubble, and its stock went right down to $4. And all those people who were, you know, whining and dining on Wednesday night were all sitting there and wiping their tears because they had not rang the cash register. And there was one gentleman who was a market maker who always looked happy. And I said to him, well, why aren't you all upset like everyone else in the trading floor? And he said, Peter, I bought it at 10. I sold it at 30. I bought it at 50. I sold it at 80. I bought it at 100. I sold it at 200. By the time it got to $340, I had made $20 million and I didn't care what happened to it. So there's a maturity in that fear of missing out. If you're a trader, I always say it when with my show with Manuel, every night at the end of my 3 minutes or four, because I'm long-winded, I would say, if you're a trader, be nimble, take acceptable profits, don't wait around for unacceptable losses. And if you're an investor for the long haul, just stay in it, because that's not your posture. So for the young trader, I say trade the market, but ring the cash register. Don't be greedy. It's important to, when a market that can go up and down as this one does, hit singles and doubles. That's what we say in America. It's an analogy to baseball. You don't always have to swing for the fences and hit a home run. If right. you wait around for a home run, you may end up getting called out. But if you hit a single and a double every day, you come home with a green, and green is good.
Thank you so much for this insight.
Peter, I think this story was great, and it's a great recommendation also for all the traders and investors out there watching our show.
Good.
So, guys, thank you very much for this week. I appreciate your time. It was good to see you. Salah Eddine Boumidi, head of markets of IG, and Peter Tuckman, the Einstein of Wall Street. Thank you so much. Thank you for watching this show. More information on IG.com. This was the IG Trading Talk. I'm Manuel Koch. See you next time.